Our speaker tonight is Chris, and he's from Lancaster, from the Heart Speakers Group.
Hi, everybody. My name is Christopher Dreisbach, and I'm an alcoholic. I never know how loud to speak into these things because they're all so different everywhere I go. I don't know how to turn it up. It's okay, though, because I'm just going to talk anyway, with or without this microphone. And if you can't hear me back there, then move up a little bit, I guess. Either way, I'm told that before I bore you all to death here for the next 54 minutes, I have to first qualify myself to do so. And in order to do that, I have to tell you I have a sobriety date. Conveniently, it's August 27th of 2007. That's right. The dog. The dog even knows that today is August 27th of 2012, so that's pretty cool. The dog is definitely smarter than me, and I think he should be up here, which is okay. I'm a man enough to admit that today, that the dog is smarter than me, and it's pretty great. In addition to having a sobriety date, I also have a home group. It's from the Heart Speakers Group. We meet every single Wednesday night at 8 p.m. in the 500 block of Pearl Street in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I'm not used to being restricted to a microphone, so if I look like I'm going to, like, fall over or something, then just kick me out of the way and throw somebody else up here. Yeah, for any odd reason you find yourself wandering around Lancaster, Pennsylvania on a Wednesday night around 8 o'clock and you have any remote hope of staying sober, you have any remote, like, desire to stay sober and meet some awesome people, I would find myself in the 500 block of Pearl Street. Because that's what I did several years ago, and I haven't left there since, because every single Wednesday night that I'm available, I am there, just ready to go. And the place is absolutely awesome. There's a strong message of hope carried there every single week. And it's a very similar meeting to this one right here. It's just indoors and with not as many dogs. So, yeah. At that home group, I have this strange guy I call my sponsor. And what he did was he took me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. As a result of having been taken through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have the honor and the privilege of taking other men through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's literally the coolest thing that I get to do in my life. To be able to watch somebody go from absolutely miserable, beat up, hopeless, and pretty much every bad word you can find rolled into one, to somebody who's absolutely brimming over with self-confidence and awesomeness all rolled into one. And, yeah, it's the best thing I get to do. So, those things, I'm told, qualify me to bore you. So, I will start out very briefly by telling you I was born in this place called Emmaus, Pennsylvania. It's not too far from here. What I got going on in Emmaus is some real awesome stuff. I'll tell you a little bit about it. I'm in Emmaus, and I got a mom and a dad. We're still together. I got a whole bunch of little brothers running around. One of them is actually running around here right now, which is pretty cool. I got a couple dogs. Got a house with four walls and a roof. You got plenty of clothing to wear and plenty of food to eat, as you can all clearly see, except for those of you who are unfortunate enough to be listening to this recording at a later date. Basically, I have absolutely everything I would ever need to survive and anything I'd ever need. Like, if you were looking in from the outside, you would say, like, this guy right here, he's got everything he needs to make it happen in this world. Like, he's definitely poised to make a run at something or do something good. But there's something really, 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 really wrong with me inside from the second I can remember. And I honestly don't even remember the first thought that I have. I don't remember anything about anything, really. So what you're going to hear is my perception of what occurred. And my perception of what occurred is that I was always just awfully uncomfortable. You know, and a wise man once said that, like, it was like I had this huge hole inside of me, you know. And that was the best way I ever heard the way I felt described. Because what I felt was like I had a huge, huge hole inside of me, and it sucked really bad. Some of the symptoms I like to associate with that huge hole inside of me, number one, absolutely horribly uncomfortable in social situations. Anybody ever feel that one before? Cold people? So, for example, if you're not following me, if I'm in a room with a whole bunch of people I don't know, Like, I'm absolutely terrified to be there. If you want to make it a little bit worse, if I'm in a room with a whole bunch of people I do know, I still feel the same way. I'm absolutely full of fear, and I just want to hide in the corner and hide. And I'll tell you what, like, it goes even worse than that. If I'm in a room with my family, people who love me more than anything in the world, I still feel exactly that same way. Like, this feeling inside of me doesn't go anywhere, no matter what the external circumstance going around on around me is. And if it gets even worse than that, if it's just me and the picnic tables in the room, like, I'm still absolutely full of fear. There's something real wrong with me inside. And a couple other little things I like to associate with that feeling that I had is, like, I could never, ever sleep at night. Anybody? Have you ever heard that one before? Yeah. And the reason I can't sleep at night is because I'm always sitting up thinking about every single thing under the sun. I'm thinking about things that are real, things that aren't real, things that could possibly be real, thinking about things that aren't even things, and I'm just thinking about everything under the sun all night long. And, like, I'm 8 years old, and I'm worried about how I'm going to pay my homeowner's insurance one day, and I'm having, like, seizures, and I'm just freaking out all night. And it sucks real bad because, at least in Emmaus, I don't know where you guys are from, but I had to go to this place called school. Anybody? Quakertown? No? No schools? Cool. Why couldn't I grow up here? Well, at least where I'm from, school starts real early in the morning. And when I'm sitting up thinking about my homeowner's insurance all night, I don't do too well in the morning. It's not my time. And to make it worse, I go to school, and school's this hideous social situation. There's like 20 other kids and a teacher. And to make it even worse than that, there's girls in school, and I'm terrified of girls. And yeah, I can't pay any attention at all to anything that's going on a chalkboard behind the teacher because I'm super concerned with what every single person in the entire room is thinking about me at any given moment. And I know for some odd reason they're all thinking about me at every single moment because I'm really important. And it's crazy because, like, it's not pleasant and I don't like it. And I just kind of skate by to the best of my ability there for a while. Until this one day when I'm about 13 years old, I get to attend this thing called a wedding. Has anybody ever been to a wedding here before? No one? Cool. All I hear are the crickets, cicadas, but it's all right. And at this wedding, there's this cool thing called an open bar, okay? And I'm going to set up the scene for you because it's the way I have to do it. Is this hideous social situation, and I'm absolutely terrified. I'm sitting in, like, the deepest corner I could possibly sit in, wishing I was dead and wishing, like, everything would just collapse around me. And it's just not fun because I see all the adults, like, you know, drinking and laughing and dancing and having a good time, and I'm, like, sitting in the corner doing none of those things. I just wish it was over and nothing, you know. I'm just not having fun at all whatsoever. But what I see is the adults drinking, and I see them laughing, and I see them dancing, and I see them having a great time. And being the genius that I am, after a while of sitting around being miserable, I theorized that if I do the same thing they're doing, like, maybe I could have some fun too. Because what they were doing is very attractive to me at that point, and what I was doing was very unattractive to me at that point, because I was just sitting in the corner hiding. And so, at the age of 13, with the incredible ability to be larger than everybody else and grow facial hair at a rapid clip, I walk up to this open bar. And I can set up the open bar for you too. It's a bunch of plastic jugs with the cheapest watered down liquor you'll ever find. And then some other stuff to water them down even more. But it's free and you can go at it. And I go up and I take a little plastic cup, very similar to that one over there, and I fill it up from the plastic jug and I drink. And then I repeat the process, and I repeat the process again, and I repeat the process again, and I repeat the process again, and I repeat the process again. And over the course of repeating this process several times, what happens is the most incredible thing that ever happened in my life to that point. And the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous describes this very clearly as a sense of ease and comfort. And it definitely is the best way to put that into words. That's what happened to me. A sense of ease and comfort flowed over me after I took several of these drinks. And in layman's terms, what a sense of ease and comfort means to me is, like, my mind stopped racing. I stopped caring about what anything was going on. I stopped, like, just being uncomfortable in that situation, and suddenly I became comfortable. Suddenly I became excited to be at this place that a couple minutes before I was really not excited to be at. And it was pretty incredible, I got to tell you. So what I continued to do was fill that cup up and drink from it, I started to laugh, and I started to dance, and I started to have a good time like all the rest of the people there. And it was great until the end when I got grounded. For the rest of my life. If you ask my mom, I am still grounded today, probably. Just out on leave. And, yeah. But here's the thing, is like I felt wonderful, so being grounded wasn't that big a deal. And I went home, and I went into my room, and for the first time in my entire life, I just hit the pillow and fell asleep. There was absolutely no sitting up worrying about the car insurance, the homeowner's insurance, anything. It was great. I just went to bed. And I woke up the next morning, and I understood very clearly what had occurred the night before. And the first thought in my mind, even though I was a little physically ill, was like, how can I find somebody who's 21 to get me some more of that stuff? Because that is some wonderful stuff. And I did. I found a wise member of my family who got me a squeeze bottle fifth of Governor's Club whiskey, which was $4.99 at the time, in case you were curious. And it was wonderful. So I took it into my room, a place where I had been uncomfortable my entire life, save the night before. And I twisted off that little cap, and I put the squeeze bottle fifth up to my mouth, and I drank from it. And what occurred was the same thing that happened the night before, just a little quicker this time because it wasn't watered down. It's this awesome feeling flowed over me, and that huge hole inside of me just kind of disappeared, and my mind was suddenly just okay with being in that room alone for the first time, you know, and it was incredible. And just this overwhelming sense of good feeling came over me, and everything was great. So basically, long story short, what I did was I made it my absolute goal to locate that stuff as often as I possibly could. Because the most important thing to a guy like me is that I feel okay. Don't really care so much about you guys and how you feel. But if I feel all right, everything's good. So I make it my goal to find that stuff as often as I possibly can. And I do a pretty decent job of that. And here's the thing, is that works like that, like for a while, you know, for a period of time. Alcohol did a pretty fantastic job keeping me full and keeping me happy and keeping my life kind of manageable internally, if not externally. But a strange thing happened, is after a while, I'm drinking enough to probably kill a small individual, but this hole inside of me is only closing up a little bit. You know, and now I'm drinking a whole lot, enough to kill a normal person, and like, I don't feel all right. I feel kind of rough still, and it's not cool, because I'm used to feeling real good when I drink, and when I drink, now it's just not really effective anymore. And so, man, I'll tell you what, I have to bring this to the attention of a very wise member of my family, and that wise member of my family introduces me to this really cool green leafy form of alcohol. And what happens when I consume this green leafy form of alcohol is pretty wonderful, because it does the exact same thing that the liquid form of alcohol does. It takes that huge hole inside of me and it puts it down, and it makes my mind stop racing, and it makes me feel real comfortable wherever I am. It also helps me sleep at night too. And it makes me eat a lot of Doritos and gives me red eyes and stuff. But the important piece here is that it takes that huge hole inside of me and shuts it down. It basically takes me from feeling horrible to feeling great in a matter of a few seconds, and I love that. And so I found a new answer to my problem. And here, this stuff works for a little while too, in conjunction with the liquid form of alcohol, of course. But after a while, it's just kind of not effective anymore. Now I'm using this stuff. I'm doing all sorts of crazy things, like baking it into pastries. And like, I'm just doing all this stuff to feel better. And like, none of it's working. I'm doing that, and I'm drinking heavily and in combination. And like, that hole inside of me is only closing a little bit. And now like, I'm doing all this stuff, and I'm still uncomfortable in social situations, and I'm getting paranoid. And it's just not fun. And so I have to bring that to the attention of that wise member of my family. He introduces me to a few other forms of alcohol. And what they do, strangely enough, is essentially the same thing that the first couple did, is they took that huge hole inside of me and they shut it down, and they made my mind race in deep different ways, but still good ways, and gave me that overwhelming sense of good feeling. And everything was great for a period of time, and they all kind of ceased to work too. And this kind of sucks a little bit, because you know, when they stop working, now I'm doing all this stuff and I'm piling substances into my body, and I still cannot kill what's going on inside of me. It's just not effective. And so he introduces me to this real interesting white powdery form of alcohol. And what this stuff does is shocking. Shocking. Because it takes that huge hole inside of me and it shuts it down. And it makes me feel comfortable with everything going on around me. And in addition to that, it makes me take the Doritos, chuck them out the window, and run around like a maniac. But, the important piece here is that it makes me feel comfortable with everything going on. That sense of ease and comfort is produced when I consume this stuff. And it works for a period of time. And then, at some point, of course, like this stuff also stops working. You know, and that's a sad place to be, because in my world, at least, at that point, like there was only one place to go from there, and I'm not interested in going there at all. And I'll tell you why I'm not interested in going to that other form of alcohol, because I've, number one, seen people, you know, have some great difficulty with it in my family. I've seen some people die from it. I don't really want to die, nor do I want to have any great difficulty, because I'm a very lazy man. And, you know, I'm just basically not interested in going there, and I can tell you a couple other reasons why, because at this point in my life, externally, everything looks wonderful, and I'll tell you why. Number one, I have a prestigious career waiting tables at Friendly's. You know it's prestigious, right? Number two, I have a bank account, and there's money in it. That's pretty good. Number three, I have a 1991 Oldsmobile that's completely legal, licensed, registered, everything. That's right. That's right. I also have a girlfriend, and I have a prestigious side career selling things that are not available in traditional retail markets. Now, if we're looking from the outside at my life, or at least if I'm looking in my delusional world, I'm doing incredible. Like, I have money, I have a girl, I have a car, I have a job, everything's great. But for some reason inside, nothing is killing that hideous feeling that has been with me for my entire life. So internally, my life sucks. Externally, my life's awesome. And I know that in order to make myself feel a little better inside, all that stuff's probably going to go away. And I'm not really interested in doing that. So I'm going to, you know, plug forward and feel like crap for as long as I possibly can, you know? What actually happens, of course, contrary to my plan, is I'm at a party and I'm drinking out of a keg. And a man comes up with a wax paper bag, and he says, "Here, try this." And I said, "Okay." What was in that wax paper bag was, of course, this brown powdered form of alcohol that I swore I would never try. And I immediately tried it. And what occurred when I consumed this brown powdered form of alcohol was the most magical thing that ever happened in my entire life. Because it was just like that alcohol at that wedding several years before, is it took that huge hole inside of me and absolutely mauled it. It took my mind and made it completely incapable of thinking about anything. And it did, it just gave me the most ease and comfort that I could ever have imagined, more so in my wildest dreams. Like, I could never have imagined how wonderful that stuff would make me feel. And so what I did was I tried to obtain that stuff as often as I possibly could. Shocking enough, right? But for some reason, there's something slightly different about this form of alcohol, as it seems to take my money an awful lot quicker than the other ones. Theoretically, it is cheaper than the other ones, but for some reason, my money's disappearing very quickly. So within less than 1 month, I can tell you what my external life looked like. And my internal life, perfect in every way possible. But within 1 month, my external life looked like this. The prestigious career that I held at Friendly's, they no longer wanted me around, and I will tell you why. Because when you show up, throw up in a trash can, take a 4-hour lunch break, and come back like nothing's wrong, they get very upset, naturally. And so they have to ask me to leave, you know, and the 1991 Oldsmobile smashed very quickly, the bank account going way quicker than either of those things. The girlfriend was still there, but it wasn't pleasant. The prestigious side career that I had, gone rather quickly as well, because people hate paying for things they don't receive. And like, I'm not showing up for family events. I'm not even showing up for my little brother. I'm not showing up for anything at all in the entire world. Like, the only thing that is on my mind is feeling better, and the only way that I feel better is this thing. And that is it. Number one, point blank, that's where I'm at. And now what really sucks is, like, my external world has fallen apart. And when I'm unemployed, and I can't keep a job waiting tables for more than 2 or 3 tables, and I need money to feel better, I have to start doing what every tough guy around does, and it's take stuff from my mommy. I know there's some tough guys in here. Gotta be. Right? No? Ah, there's a tough guy. All right. And so here's the thing. When my mom goes to grab a DVD and stick it in the DVD player, and neither of them are there, she gets naturally upset. So she gives me this ultimatum, which is, you either need to go to detox or you need to get as far away from me as humanly possible. being as tough as I am, I immediately agreed to go to detox because I'm not interested in being homeless. It's not really in my plans. I don't want to do it. And so I go to this detox, this beautiful place in Warnersville, Pennsylvania, just down the street from the Karen Foundation at the old state hospital. And I can tell you that as I'm walking into this detox facility, I'm about to separate myself from the only thing that makes me feel okay. And I'm absolutely horrified. I'm terrified in every way possible. And I'm starting to feel physically ill. And I get up in there, and there's like six other guys, and none of them speak any English whatsoever, and me. And I'm feeling physically horrible, and I'm feeling even worse inside, and I'm just not enjoying myself at all. And naturally, I don't last too long. I get through the detox process and a couple days of the rehab process, and I accumulate some incredible ideas as to how I'm going to keep myself sober when I leave rehab, because that's what I, you know, need to do while I'm in rehab, is accumulate ideas as to how I'm going to keep myself sober, right? It makes sense. And what I come up with is pretty incredible, and I'll share it with you. This is when I get out of this rehab, I'm going to get a job, I'm going to work a lot of hours, and I'm going to get back with my girlfriend, because it's good. Because now that I'm physically sober, like, I can exercise proper use of my will, and everything will be okay. And it makes perfect sense to me, so I grab my Marlboro bag, huck it over my shoulder, and I start hitchhiking down 422 to get back home. And I stop at every payphone along the way, and I call my mommy, and I tell her, you know, like, I'm good now, I've been sober for 7 days, which is a complete lie, but everything will be okay now because I'm physically sober. And, you know, she dug that, so she came to get me after a while. And here, you know, she brings me back, and we sit down at the table with the old man. And the old man, you know, gives me the old, you know, what are you going to do now, spiel. And I hit him with it. I let him know. I was like, I'm going to get a job. I'm going to work a lot of hours, and I'm going to get back with the girlfriend. My dad, being an incredible, naturally principled man who has no idea what he's up against, says, that's an awesome plan. And flips me the keys to his car. And I leave his home in Emmaus, Pennsylvania, with every intention of obtaining employment, working a lot of hours, and getting back with a girlfriend. But what actually occurs is within a couple hours, I am highly intoxicated, asleep in a bathroom somewhere in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And it doesn't seem to make sense to me. But I don't care, because I feel a whole lot better than I did during that 7-9 day treatment center stay. And here's the rough part is, like, I don't have a job. I don't have any money. This thing that I'm doing requires money, and my mom has the DVDs locked up and guarded by, like, vicious Dobermans and things like that. So now, that's a lie. There were no Dobermans. But it's probably a Jack Russell Terrier or wherever that guy's at. But I was still scared, so that's, you know. So what I have to do is I have to, like, start taking things from other people because that's the best plan that I can come up with. And so less than 1 month after leaving this detox facility, the Macungie Police Department has arrested me on multiple felony burglary counts. Because apparently in this commonwealth, it's illegal to walk into other people's houses and take their belongings. But at this point, my mind was telling me I was just like a hardworking guy trying to get through another day. And like I had no idea why these police were bothering me. But now here we are less than a month after me nearly peeing myself going to this detox. And now they're taking me to jail. And all I know about jail is what TV tells you. And it's like Bubba's coming to get me and it's just going to go down. You know, and I'm really big. But I know Bubba's at least a foot taller and at least 100 pounds heavier. And he's just sitting there waiting for me. And I'm absolutely horrified. And I get in and I get my monochrome colored uniform. And I go directly to the phone that's hanging on the wall and I call my mommy right away. And I say, Mommy, you got to come get me. My bail's only 50 grand. Hurry up. And at that point, I hear the most audible click of my life because Mom is coming nowhere near that county prison with any penny whatsoever. And long story short, I get to sit there for several months. And what happens over the course of those several months is I get physically sober. Very physically sober. But I also accumulate a lot of ideas as to how I'm going to keep myself sober when I get out of jail. Because that's what you're supposed to do in jail, is how can you correct yourself? How can you get better, right? Anybody? Yeah? Maybe? No? That's how I felt. So I come up with this awesome plan, and I'll share it with you just because I like you guys a little bit. Because I'm going to get a job, I'm going to work a lot of hours, and I'm going to get back with my girlfriend, but it's going to work this time because I've been sober for a couple of months, and I'm real sober now. I can properly exercise the use of my will. And it's going to work. And I hit this to my dad when he comes to pick me up from jail. And the old man, being naturally principled and wonderful, says, "That is awesome, man. Like, go do that, please." And bam, flips me the keys. I can tell you that when I got the keys in my hand, I had every intention of going out to obtain employment and get back with my girlfriend, because I had just been in jail for an extended period of time and was not really interested in going back to the life that led me there, because it's not real pleasant and I don't ever want to go back to jail again. I don't know if anybody in here has ever been in jail, but if you enjoyed it, there's probably something wrong with you. Not going to lie. Don't be offended. I love you anyway, but... you know? What actually happened, again, contrary to my plan, is within a couple hours, I'm highly intoxicated, sleep in a bathroom somewhere in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And now there's something slightly different in my external circumstances, is I got this guy called a PO. Has anybody in here ever had one of them? Anybody? Yeah? You had one? Cool. In Lehigh County, I don't know about where you guys are from, but they ask you to do crazy things like pee in cups. Okay? When my career and my hobby is sleeping in a bathroom, I don't pee in the cup the way he likes. So he gives me an ultimatum. He says, "Listen, you're going to have 7 days to clean up this problem, or you're going to go back to jail." And I say, "Yes, sir. I will clean up that problem." And the mathematics immediately start in my head. It tells me that I have 4 days to continue what I'm doing, and I have to stop. And if I don't stop, I'm going back to jail, and I'm not really interested in doing that. So I'm done after 4 more days. That's it. Count them right there. 4. Never doing that stuff ever again. At least until I'm off parole. But those 4 days go by. Everything's real smooth. Feeling real good about my prospect for the morning. Get up in the morning. I don't feel very well. But I think... yeah. That's what I was thinking. But I've been off parole for a while, so... yeah. I'm pretty close to Lehigh County, right? Here's the thing, is when I wake up that morning, I know I have to stop. I don't feel very well. And we've established the most important thing to me is feeling okay. So I figure if I go out about my business, I know that if I drink enough water, I could probably beat this guy's test and I'll be all right. And so, I go about my business and I come back home and I go to sleep and I get up the next morning and I know I got T-minus 2 days to go see this PO. And I know I have to stop or I'm definitely going back to jail and I'm not really interested in doing that. But for some reason, I don't feel very well when I wake up. And so I figure it's all right, because if I eat some vitamins and drink plenty of water, I could still beat this test. I'll be all right. And I go about my business and I go to bed and I wake up the next morning and I know I got T-minus 1 day to go see this PO. And I really don't want to go back to jail and I don't really feel too well. So like my obvious... intelligent brain tells me that if I just drink some bleach, I could beat this guy's test and I'll be okay. So I go about my business and I come back home and I go to sleep and I get up the next morning. I know I got about 6 hours to go see this PO. And bleach is really unattractive if you mix it with anything. And we've established I don't want to go to jail, but for some reason I can't seem to stop doing this crazy thing that's going to send me there. And so I do what any intelligent creature like myself does. Is I take some people's stuff to a pawn shop and I run to North Carolina. Because we've established I'm willing to go to any lengths to stay out of jail. I am not interested in that place at all. But for some reason, I am physically unable to stop using this thing that's going to send me there. And I don't understand it at all. So I end up in North Carolina. And then I can prove to you how overly intelligent I am. Is within 10 days, I get arrested in Buffalo, New York. Some geography majors in here, because clearly you understand that within 10 days. Yeah. So now, long story short, is I'm sitting in jail in Buffalo, New York, and it's not really that fun. But they get to send me back home to Lehigh County after a little while, and yeah. I get to sit there for a long time, a really nice long time, like 11 months and some change. And what occurs over the course of this 11 months is some cool stuff. I get to go see Judgy Wudgy. And Judgy Wudgy's upset to see me for the second time because I'm like 19 at this point. And he says, "Listen, man, like you're not really doing a very good job living. Like, I don't want to see you again. So I'm going to send you this place called the Keenan House when you get out of here after all your time's done." And That'll fix you. You know? Go to rehab again. Because I didn't finish rehab the last time, so it clearly is the problem here. Like, I didn't finish treatment. And yeah, makes good sense. Thanks, Judgy. So I get to sit there for 11 months and some change, and then they send me to the Kenan house. Beautiful, beautiful Kenan house. Somebody in here has to know what I'm talking about. I speak all over the place, and there's always one dude in the back who's like, "I'm right there." Nobody? I know. Literally everywhere, somebody knows where it is. But here's the thing, is I get to sit there for a rare 28-day stay. And what happens over the course of this 28-day stay at the Kenan house is I do my best to, like, pay attention and, like, accumulate enough knowledge to keep me sober when I get out. And, like, I just try and do the best I can, you know. And I accumulate these ideas that I'll share with you as to how I'm going to stay sober when I get out. And you're never going to beat this, because this is the best plan ever. As I'm going to get out, I'm going to get a job, I'm going to work a lot of hours. I'm going to get back with my girlfriend, but here's your kicker. Who's laughing at me? Get this. Get this. 8 o'clock, going to a meeting, baby. Yeah. Who's going to beat that one? Dudek? So here's the thing. This is what actually happens. This might shock you. As I get out of the Kenan house, the old man picks me up. Says, "What are you going to do?" I hit him with the best plan ever. Job, hours, girlfriend, meeting. Bam. Let's top this off right here as to why this is going to be a success for me. Now I've been sober, physically sober, for over 1 year. That's right. Physically sober for 1 year. I also have a certificate that says I'm sober because I completed treatment. And I'm flashing this to everybody I know. And I'm telling them, like, I got a year sober and I got a certificate and I'm going to be fine. And I have every intention of being fine because I'm sick of doing stuff like I've been doing. It sucks really bad. And I want nothing more than to just be a good brother to my brother and my other brother and my other brother. And a good son to my mom and a good son to my dad and a good friend to the friends I don't have anymore. And I just want to be okay. And I just want to feel all right. And that's it. That's all I want. And here's what happens is my dad flips me the keys. And within a couple hours, I'm highly intoxicated in a bathroom in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And I can tell you, when I got the keys in my hand, if you hooked me up to a million lie detector tests and said, "Hey, are you going to go do that?" I was, "No." And all of them would have registered that as a truth, because nowhere in my body and nowhere in my heart and nowhere in my mind did I want to do any of that stuff. But what happened is the second I got keys in my hand, the second I was of my own free will, and the second I was of my own volition, I immediately went and did it. Despite all the mega consequences that were poking me in the face, I immediately went and did it. And it makes no sense whatsoever. And here's what makes this a little bit worse, is at this point, I'm in this bathroom, sort of supposed to be sleeping. But the thing that I did no longer produced the same effect it used to. And I can tell you, it wasn't a question of quality of product. There was something very wrong with me inside again. Because that stuff had also lost its power. And now, I have no job. I have nothing. Nobody wants me around because everybody knows what's going on at this point. And long story short, I get to do a whole lot of really ugly things, and I get to, you know, it's just ugly, the physical things that I got to do. But, like, what's really horrible and what's really bad is how I was feeling inside while doing this stuff. And it's just hideous. Because I would pray every single night and every single morning and every single day to a God that I absolutely did not believe in to just kill me and put an end to it. Because there was absolutely nothing I wanted more than to just die, fall off the face of the miserable universe, because I could not stand living inside my body. I could not stand doing anything whatsoever anywhere, because my life had become awful. I had no human that wanted any contact with me. I had no animal, probably. There were, like, squirrels in the parks I was posted up at running away from me. They were like, "That guy's going to steal my nut. It's not cool." And it really sucked pretty bad. Not going to lie. And, you know, like, I don't show up for anything. I don't do anything. I just, like, take things from people and buy things that do nothing for me anymore and, like, just go about my miserable existence. And I can tell you, this strange thing happened on the bright and early in the morning of August 27th of 2007. I'm wandering in the regions of 9th and Gordon Streets in Allentown, and pretty much no business being there other than no good business. And a little black Honda pulls up and says, "Hey, man, what are you doing?" And I just said, "Hey, taking a walk." And he said, "Put your hands against the wall." And bright and early, on August 27, 2007, the Allentown Vice Squad effectively put an end to my misery, or at least the beginning of the end, because they put handcuffs on me and took me back to Lehigh County Prison. I can tell you, my plans for August 27, 2007 included absolutely nothing about getting sober. Trust me. My plans looked like this. It was, I'm going to go find my best friend. I'm going to rob him. I'm going to go get some stuff that does nothing for me. I'm going to wait another hour, try and rob my best friend again, get some more stuff that does nothing for me. And I'm going to see if my friend's dumb enough to see me a third time that day, and I'm going to try and rob him again. Those are my plans for my sobriety date. Standing here 5 years later, my plans were to rob my best friend three times. Instead, I stand here and tell you that's my sobriety date because the Allentown Vice Squad put an end to it before I had an opportunity to continue. So what happens is I get tossed back in Lehigh County Prison. I'm going to try and make this real quick. And I sit there for a couple months, and I think I'm going to be there for the rest of my life because sentences never get shorter. They always get longer. And Judge Iwudji looks at me after a month or two and says, "Yo, man, you're 20 years old, and this clearly isn't working very well for you. You really, really, really suck at life. Like, I'm going to send you to this place called Bowling Green, and if this isn't fiction, I ever see you again, you're done." All right. Whatever. You know, I'll see you in a couple months, pretty much. Because the way it's been going is that's what happens. Because no matter what I try rehab, I completed it, I had a certificate, didn't really work too well, did it? Tried to get to a meeting at 8 o'clock when I left, I couldn't even make it to a goddamn meeting. Because I can't stay sober of my own free will for long enough to make it to 8 o'clock. If I'm released at 7 o'clock, I'd probably be high at 7:15. This is not working very well, and Judge Iwudji sees it. So he sends me to Bowling Green, which is a treatment center on the border of Pennsylvania and Delaware. And what I can tell you is that is a hideous social situation. And there are 110 other people there, and I'm absolutely horrified to be there, and it sucks real bad, and I sit there right in the middle of everything, and I just wish I was dead, and I wish I could just go back to jail, because it's a lot easier to just sit and play chess and cards all day than it is to listen to people talk about stuff I don't want to listen to, but I try. And about 20 days go by, and the counselor, the awesome hippie counselor that I have, says, "Listen, man, the county's sick of paying for you to be here. How about a halfway house?" I was like, "Now, man, I'm going to go back to Allentown, I'm going to get a job, I'm going to get back with the girl, and I'm going to go to a meeting. It's going to work this time, and I know it's going to work this time, because it didn't work the last bunch of times, so it's going to work. It has to, because what is the other option? Where do you go? What do you do? I have no idea what to do, and I know that my plan will work eventually if I just keep plugging away at it in the most miserable fashion ever." Thankfully, the hippie counselor is a lot smarter than me. And he says, "How about that halfway house?" And I say, "Absolutely not, because the only people that go to halfway houses are loser junkies who live under bridges and have big beards." That's what I was thinking, you know. And here's the thing: is like I was that guy, but you couldn't have told me, because in my mind I was doing great, and I had that plan, and it was lined up, and everything was going to be okay. And he says, "Listen, like, go upstairs and pray about it tonight, and I'll talk to you in the morning." I said, "No way! Like, if I could." Prayer is going to do nothing. If God was real, I'd be dead. I asked that idiot a bunch of times. He never did it. Clearly. I says, "All right, how about you go upstairs and just say, hey, give me some inspiration. Just throw it in the air." I'm like, "All right, cool. Stop talking to me." And I go upstairs to my little hotel room with two other guys, both of them on sleep apnea machines, and I sit up all night and I think about stuff. And somewhere around 3 a.m., I'm just laying there, angry at everything. And I'm like, "Hey, give me some inspiration." And I sit there and I think. And about 6:30 in the morning, I get up and I go eat my mush, you know, for breakfast. And I go across the way to see that hippie counselor. And he's like, "Yo, man, how about the halfway house?" And at that point, I got to say the most spiritual thing I've ever said in my entire life, still to this day, which was okay. And within a couple hours, they sent me on this little van all the way up to Lititz, Pennsylvania. Forgive me if you know Lititz, Pennsylvania, or if you love it. But at this point in my life, I am absolutely enraged to be going to Lititz, Pennsylvania, because what I see when I get there is like one horse and one half of a buggy or something. Like, there's nothing there. And my plan, my head's telling me that my plan is to go to Allentown, and my plan is to like get a job, my plan is to get back with a girl, my plan is to be okay, and my plan is to take this super delusional plan and just execute it. Like, I have the power to execute it. But instead, I get to go to this crappy old halfway house, and I'm real angry about being there, and they tell me I have to go to a meeting the first night, and I go to a stupid meeting the first night. And they say, "You got to raise your hand and get phone numbers." And I raise my hand, and I'm like, "Yo, I'm Chris, do I need a phone number?" And they shoot this little yellow piece of paper all the way around the room, and they fill it up with phone numbers. and they give it to me, and as I'm walking out the door, I crumple it up and I throw it in the trash, because I don't know if you understand the gravity of the situation I find myself in, but a bunch of phone numbers on a stupid yellow piece of paper are not going to fix what is wrong with me. No way. Not even a remote chance. Like, if my plans don't work, your stupid piece of paper is definitely not going to work. And I throw it away where it belongs, and I go back to the halfway house and I get in trouble for it because I don't have my phone numbers. So they send me to another meeting that night, and they say, get numbers, and I raise my hand at like 8:59:59, and I say, I'm Chris, I'm new, I need a phone number. Yeah. Sitting way back there in the dark where nobody can see me, you know. And they send their little white piece of paper all the way around the room, and they fill it with phone numbers, and I take it back to my counselor at the halfway house, and I'm like, hey, man, here's my phone number. She's like, go call those people, get a ride to a meeting tonight. How are you going to do that? So I pick up the phone, I dial the first number, I say, I'm Chris, I'm new, I need a ride to a meeting. And I get the best response I've ever heard. I hear, yeah, man, the gas is real expensive, and, yeah, the ditch is real far away. You got any money? Well, I just got out of jail and a rehab, and I live in a halfway house. Yeah, I got like 14 cents and some pocket lint. And so I hang up a bit discouraged, and I call the second number, and I'm like, yo, man, I'm Chris, I'm new, I need a ride to a meeting. And I get the best response ever. Yeah, man, lettuce is real far away, and gas is real expensive. You got any money? Nope. And I hang up rather discouraged, but for some reason in my mind I have this delusional thought that like third time's a charm and there's some fairy tale crap about to happen. And I call this third number, and I'm like, yo, I'm Chris, I'm new, I need a ride to a meeting. And I get this incredible response, which is like, yo, man, but gas is real expensive, and lettuce is really far away. Like, you got any money? And I'm done with telephones. I'm done with telephone numbers. I'm done with the human race. I'm done with everything. And I immediately begin making plans to physically injure the next person who comes near me so I can just go back to jail and be done and just start over and try my plan again or something. Again, contrary to my plan, something awesome happens. The next person that comes up to me is this happy little feller, and he taps me on the shoulder and he says, hey, man, this guy just called here. He wants to pack as many guys as he possibly can into his car and go to a meeting. You want to come? I say, yeah, sure. It'll make me look like I got my own ride. I'm in. Here's what happens. It's about 6:30, rolls around. This guy pulls up in this absolutely horrible beat-up car. As I think about it longer and longer, it was probably a really nice car, but my perception was so ugly that I turned it into a beat-up car. Strange. But this guy gets out, and he gets out with a fire I have never seen from any human before anywhere in the world. And he's like, yo, man, we're going to go to Karen Foundation, and we're going to have such a great time, it's going to be awesome! And he's screaming, and he's yelling, and he's happy, and he's smiling, and I hate him from the second I see him. I just want to kill this guy. And oh my God, and he stuffs me in the back seat of his crappy old car. And I do terrible in back seats because I got a huge body and even bigger ego. And I'm literally sitting there on this 45-minute ride to the Karen Foundation, also a place that I can't stand at this point because I could never go anywhere that nice. And I'm thinking about how if I was wealthy enough to own a belt, I could choke this guy out and we can go off the edge and be done. And here's the thing, is August 27, 2012, that's hilarious. That day, not so funny, because I literally wanted to murder a happy person just because. And that's how I am physically sober with no solution in my life. I want to kill everything for no reason other than they're better than me and happier. Again, contrary to my plan, I didn't have a belt. God's funny like that sometimes. We go to the Karen Foundation. There's a one-hour speaker meeting very similar to this one, just a much more expensive podium. And behind that podium is a very squirrely little guy from Philadelphia. And that squirrely little guy from Philadelphia is talking about stuff that I absolutely cannot relate to whatsoever, like getting arrested by a park ranger and getting driven to CFCF in a dune buggy and kicking over Russian guys' fires on Roosevelt Boulevard. And I have no idea where Roosevelt Boulevard is at this point in my life. And I hate him for talking about stuff like that. But then somewhere intertwined in the middle of all that stuff I can't relate to, he's talking about how absolutely miserable he was, how his life sucked real bad, how he can never sleep at night, how everything's terrible when he's in a social situation, how he's full of fear and everything, and like, I think he's making fun of me, so I'm making plans to beat him up later. But he hit it so close to the way I felt that I thought he was after me. And then he stopped. He said he got a sponsor. He worked at 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, so he no longer has any of those problems anymore, and his life's awesome. Just, you know, a real short version of it. And I started to listen a little bit. And after the meeting, I walked up and said, yo, squirrely little guy, how'd you do that? Like, what's up? And he pointed to an equally squirrely guy I've never seen across the room. He said, ask that guy to be your sponsor. I said, absolutely not. Because it's creepy. It's like asking another guy to be your Valentine. You don't do it. Never. You can't. Thankfully, understanding that, he went from out of his way behind the podium to arrange for me a ride back to the halfway house with that other squirrely guy that I didn't know from a hole in the wall. And now I'm stuck in his crappy Kia for an entire ride home. And I'm sitting there next to him in the passenger seat, and I'm thinking the entire time, if I ask this guy to sponsor me, he's going to punch me, he's going to throw me in the car, he's going to call me names, like, what's going to happen? He's going to punch me. Oh, my God, I'm like, what am I going to do? And my brain's, like, going completely nuts, and everything's absolutely horrible. And, like, finally we get back to the halfway house, and I'm just, like, bracing for the punch. And I say, yo, man, will you be my sponsor? And he says, yeah, man. Yeah. You got a big book, man? Nope. And I think he's going to ask me for like $13 or some crap. And he reaches into his back seat and hands me a big book of alcoholics and arms. And he says, read the doctor's opinion, call me in the morning. I say, all right, I can do that. And I go back to my halfway house top bunk that I absolutely hate. And I read the doctor's opinion in the big book of alcoholics and arms about 418 times because I know there's going to be a test the next day and it's definitely going to be really hard. And I don't understand one word of the thing because it's written in 1930s speak and I don't speak that language. And so I call him the next morning, having read this 400 times, understanding zero words, and I'm like, yo, man, I read that. And he's like, man, I'll be there, man, 6:30, man. Yeah. It's like, all right, cool. 6:30 rolled around, pulled up in that crappy Kia, took me all the way back down to his apartment in the city of Lancaster, invited me in without fear for his electronics, the first time that happened in a long time. Sat me down. Talked to me about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, walked me through the doctor's opinion, the thing I read 418 times the night before and understood no words of. That man walked me through and I understood every single thing about it. I understood that book that was written 50 years before I was born explained why every single time I was out on my own, I immediately was asleep in a bathroom. A book that was written 50 years before I was born explained it. How? It makes no sense. But it did, and it hit me right in the heart, and I knew it. Like, wow. How is it possible that I was doing this to overcome a craving beyond my... How? How, Jeff? What? Mind-blowing. And really, I'm going to give you a long story short because I'm running out of time, but like, I followed this guy to the best of my absolutely poor ability. And I'm going to rephrase this in a little bit. I stuck really bad at life. If I have not established that over the last 50 minutes, you clearly were not listening. I suck really bad at life, but I followed this guy to the best of my poor ability. And it was very poor, I assure you. But I was starting to do the things that he was doing, and he was walking me through these fancy 12 steps that are right here. Anybody can see? And I didn't understand any of it. I had no idea what he was doing. I thought he was just reading out of some magical tome of some sort. And like, I didn't know what the heck was going on, nor did I really care too much, because what started to happen is after I like talked to him for a little bit, hit my knees, said a prayer to a God I didn't believe in, grabbed a notebook, started writing stuff that made no sense to me whatsoever, started telling him those things that I didn't want to tell anybody that I wrote in that notebook, and like asking a God I didn't believe in to take things away that I didn't think I had, and like... stuff that makes no sense. Like, if I keep talking about these 12 steps right now, you're going to be like, what the hell is that guy talking? It makes no sense. Because it doesn't make sense. But all I did was I followed this guy that I didn't know from a hole in the wall through some stuff that made no sense to my logical mind. And what started to happen was some pretty incredible stuff, because when I went back to my crappy halfway house top bunk, I started to fall asleep right away. And I stressed about nothing. I just went to bed and I started to be able to look people in the eye and I started to be able to care a little bit about what was going on with them and a lot less about what was going on with me. And this really strange thing started to happen is I started to feel really good as a result of it, so I could focus even more on how you were doing. And all this crazy stuff happened while I'm living at this stupid halfway house in a real short period of time, and I'm still doing stuff I don't understand, and I'm starting to clean up things with my family. And it's pretty incredible because my little brother is standing right over there, right now. And I'm pretty sure he hated me 5 years ago. He's right there. Look. I know. That's not me.
Even when you stole my
see? I'm not a fraud. And this is the thing of my own will. If I'm running on my own power, that guy back there hates me. You hate me because you have no electronics if you live in Lehigh County. But what happens is when I stop trying to run the show, as per the third step that I didn't understand at all, this incredible stuff starts to happen. And I'm thinking, like, I have to get the job, I have to get the girl. I spend my entire life focusing on that crap. It all came. And I didn't have to do anything. Like, all I had to do was keep following these 12 steps and keep following the things that my sponsor was doing and the things he was telling me to do. And I got a job. And I got to work more hours than I wanted to. And I got a girlfriend whom I'm going to marry very shortly. And I got everything else that I always wanted to focus on all the time. I need more money. I need more this. I need more that. And I can tell you, like, I have not focused on that stuff for a long time, but I keep getting more and more and more and more of it. And it makes no sense whatsoever, because every single time, like, I focus on helping another person get to a better place, I get more incredible things. And it makes no sense to a logical mind, just like the 12 steps make no sense to my logical mind. And I can tell you that I probably make no sense to anybody. And it doesn't even matter, because I'm going to leave you with this very simple principle. Are you listening, Jeff? Okay. Just want to make sure you didn't fall asleep, buddy. Everybody take a deep breath. It's hot out here. Sorry, I had to take a break. If you're in this wonderful pavilion or on the outskirts of it tonight, can you all hear me back there? Deep in the corner? Cool. If for some reason, in any way, shape, or form, you can relate to the way I used to feel, and you're feeling that right now, that sucks really bad for you, because it sucked really bad for me. But here's the cool thing. Is if you find a sponsor who has a working knowledge of the 12 steps out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you follow that person to the best of your poor ability, I will absolutely 100% guarantee the most amazing things in your life. I don't even know you at all, pretty much in any way, anybody here, except for the guys who came with me. But I can tell you that there's this weird principle going on in Alcoholics Anonymous that if you do the same thing I did, you're going to get the same freaking result. And that result is you get to go from feeling that hideous way to feeling the most incredible thing in the world. And no words that I can put to that, no super spiritual powerhouse guru words are going to make it any better. But what I can tell you that if you follow these 12 steps, your life's going to be incredible. And there's nothing else. I love you guys. Thank you for having me.